Well, last time, just to pick up, we talked about Dream 32 and 33. Dream 32 was the Dark Woman wants to speak. He has no time. He dances, but what forms are paper forms, and then he is to, and here's where it got tricky, but I think we figured it out. He is to sign a paper, and the paper is covered in blue. And we talked about the cornflower, that's what we can return to real quick. And he's told that it depends upon the detail. That's the cryptic line. It depends upon the details. And he's told you will remember the details better if the writing isn't clear, which doesn't make logical sense, but the more I think about it, the more it makes symbolic sense. And the writing still shows through. Does that all sound familiar? The reason I'm focusing on that, I think the candle lesson is the blue. And we're going to see the writing still does shine through, because about halfway through he gets back into his head. The 33rd dream is about the transformation of uranium into bromide, and two women are fearful at that process, and it's carried out by a man who died long ago, or a man who died long ago is behind it. And he contradicts the fear of these women who are freaked out at transformation, scary part of the transformation. Einstein says it's been a success. C.A. Meyer has red eyes, and he's upset because he read in the paper that Curtino, who's apparently the experimenter, has died, and Pally dismisses this as well, and then he can't get to Jung. We talked about his wasp phobia, and that's about it. A couple of details I thought we could just return to quickly. You're right. Wasp is a generic name for many stinging insects. I hadn't realized that. So a yellow jacket is a type of wasp. So I was thinking he was an Arab, but he's not, apparently. Von Franz was born in 1915, not 1918, as I said. I checked everywhere. I couldn't find anything that the cornflower was connected with Lucis. Does anyone have anything to the contrary?
One thing that I found, it was, you talked about the first of all, the blue pigment.
The cornflower.
Yeah. And the blue pigment is protocyanin, which makes the roses red. Very interesting. But the only thing that I found was that. In Estonia, the blue cornflower has been the national flower of Estonia since 1968 and symbolizes daily bread to Estonians. And that's the only.
That's certainly a link, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, because it's in that Baltic area. So it's kind of all fits in.
Yeah, all the Idiosydnia mysteries are about the sowing of the grain. That's the myth, that's when grain started. I found cornflower, and I appreciate your color there, I found that as well. And it was named because it does go in cornfields, surprise, surprise.
Right. Yeah.
What I can't figure out, and may not be important, it may be splitting hairs, you never know how far it covers. Why does the cornflower grow in cornfields?
Does it grow there intentionally, or
weed? Yeah, I guess it's like a weed. But why is, I just don't quite understand, I think there's something symbolically we're missing, it may not be that important, that why is the cornflower specific to cornfields? Why not the dandelion, or?
Sometimes it's because of the chemical makeup.
Well,
when you have a certain crop, it lends certain chemical makeup to the soil.
To the soil, right. That, you don't know what that is, though, in particular.
Mm-hmm.
It's a small point, but as far as I know, there is no direct connection. But certainly the color blue is the maternal color, which is what the Eleusinian mysteries are about. So there, he's symbolically right, if he's not factually right. I think that's the only other detail I wanted to mention. Anything else? Then we got started with the piano lesson, which is where we'll pick up today. And the main image was the two schools. What I like so much about our author there is he really put that in the context of Jung's concept of the alchemist concept of the conjunctio. Union, separation implies a reunification. And I think that might be what's going on.
I have a question about time reversal. Is
he
referring to that actual, well, I don't even know if it was known in his era, but is he referring to that, the phenomenon in physics?
Yes.
Where certain particles, certain particles can go forwards or backwards in time?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't understand it, but he says in the footnotes that's what he's talking about. Our author does, anyway.
Oh, the author does?
Yeah. The only other detail that I have been racking my brains over, which I didn't even allude to last time, is the second sentence in the second paragraph. The address is Hornweg 2, I mentioned. It's not 3, that's a typo. Not the Golden Horn, which I visited before. I have racked my brains over the Golden Horn, and I contacted my colleague Dave, who wrote the book on Kali. He didn't know either. And it shouldn't be a capital G. So who knows what that is? It might have been a dream reference, but the only I could find, which I doubt very much it is the river in Istanbul that separates Europe from Asia is called the Golden Horn. And whether Pali would have stopped there on his way to India, I don't know. It's a stretch. But in a way, we are wrestling with the border between East and West, so I thought, well, maybe. But if that were the case, it would be written with a capital G, and it's written with a small g. Oh, which reminds me. I brought along a copy of the piano lesson. You can have a look-see. This is the text, the original text. And, you know, not many letters of von Franz's survived. This may be the only one. And so here's her handwriting. This is a letter of her to him. Or a copy, obviously, of her to him. Or it's actually several letters, and I haven't quite figured out where they all fit. I don't think they're in order even. So, well, I'm passing things around. That's
the handwriting analyzer.
Take one of these. That's the continuous outline.
Okay.
Yeah. I just added a little bit.
Did you handle that lesson?
But I added to it, so it's the it will grow week by week.
Okay. Do you have any leftover?
That's the only one.
Okay,
and I gave him one last week, but that's updated. So it's just an outline of this thing because it's terribly complicated.
Now this is Polly's
letter. That's a copy of the text.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's what he sent on Franz. Uh-huh. That's his handwriting. I think it's the same size sheet, too.
Mm-hmm.
Their paper is a little bit bigger than ours. It's a little taller and a little more narrow.
Mm-hmm.
A 4 or something, I think it's called, in, if you're printing it out in your computer.
Curious, there's some kind of, I don't know, I'm just noticing this, but it's Hornweg, and then it's the Golden Horn, and that it just seems interesting that horn is repeated there. And
he's definitely pointing up that play on words.
Yeah.
But I don't know what golden means.
Does the W-E-G mean anything?
Vague is like alley.
That's like alley. Okay.
So it's Horn Alley.
Horn Alley. Okay. So it really doesn't.
No. Mm-hmm. And the Becky, you can even check, right? Do you want to, I don't know if you're good enough to read the German enough. And I'm pretty sure the golden is a small G. Maybe Tom, when he gets around there, you can have a look.
Tom.
It's in the second paragraph, so it's right at the beginning. The address is Hornweg, simply 2, not the golden. It's a small G, isn't it? Yeah. Küsnacht is the town where Jung lived and von Franz lived. And G and golden is small. So a golden horn sounds like a name of a pub, but it would have a capital G and a capital M, so I don't know what's going on. It's not that important. But.
You know, it's capitalized in the country.
Yeah, I think like names of restaurants, yeah, they're always capitalized. Certainly the first letter would be capitalized.
I was thinking more of street names.
Street names are always capitalized.
Yeah. If you took the word golden out and just said not the horn, which I visited before, then the golden would be a descriptor.
A golden is an adjective.
Right, and so the horn would just be a place.
So right.
A place called horn?
I don't know.
Or street?
Not that I know of. Right, no. I mean, I know most, I lived there, so I know most of the, I mean, I lived in Küsnacht for a while, so I know most of the streets. And
it is a lowercase g.
Yeah.
It's just the descriptor then, you know, adjective, golden.
So who knows? Detail. But you do try to milk these things for everything you can. So let's see, that took us up to the third paragraph. Hornweg is obviously what she's doing, Karin. He's written this and sent it to von Franz, a kind of a love letter, I think, in a way. Küsnacht is where she lives. Hornweg, too, it must have been her address at that time. She lived on another street when I was there, but. So I arrived at Hornweg 2 in Küsnacht, and I opened the door. Then I heard from a distance the firm masculine voice which I know so well and which always sounds like the voice of a ship's captain. It said, time reversal, and I saw his, the master's, image. Should be image, I think. It's a typo. Which looked like conical paper bags, this is plural, pointing downwards with their openings upward and made of some overlapping sheets.
Is there an illustration of that?
No. Not that I know of.
And made of
sheets. Well, let's see. Remember, we're shuttling back and forth between two texts, so just let me put this away. The master is just another word for the stranger. So I'll go back to page 140 now. First, second, third, fourth paragraph. At the beginning of the piano lesson, Pauli does not yet understand how such a union can be brought about. Quantum physics, depth psychology, blah, blah. Then he decided in his imagination to visit Marie-Louise von Franz. As soon as he reaches her house at Hornweg 2, he hears the voice of the master and is taken back to a time before 1913. At that time, as has been mentioned, his godfather, Ernst Mach, had great influence on, must be him. Man, how many times you read these things, you keep seeing mistakes. Mach's influence had a negative effect on the development of Pauli's soul and on his attitude towards religion. Mach and Pauli's father had renounced their spiritual past without the clarity to know what was thereby lost. Pauli became clear about this loss only as he learned about the mystical currents of Judaism. So the point there is he's being taken back to his own personal life when he was 13 years old. Suggesting that, well, suggesting what? What do you think? What's that? Right, right, right. His personal split started there, and that's what we've been working on in him, and then science would be the external version of that. There's one real red flag which our author doesn't pick up. Remember the previous dreams. Paper bags. Remember he was dancing and produced paper forms? Mm-hmm. So, what's that tell us? This is one more of those pieces of paper, I'm afraid. And we'll see von Franz refused to respond to it. She thought it was just bogus. And I think that's why. So,
What did you say about the paper before?
He was dancing. The dark woman wanted to talk to him, and he didn't have time, and he danced paper forms into existence. So this would be one of those forms that he dances into existence, which are just empty. I think it is, yeah. I mean, in effect it is. We're going to follow it along for a while and see that I believe he's trying to let the real thing come up. And that would be the blue that was covering the paper. But when we get to the lecture to the strangers, it's just asinine. Why would you write something like that to somebody when you're writing a heart communication? And that's the writing that shows through. And the whole thing is coming out of the phase where he is slowly losing touch with his emotions and moving further and further into his head.
Well, in some ways, too, when you think about it, he's trying to go visit von Franz, who is a source to get to the problem, mm-hmm. and instead he goes back into himself.
Yeah, I mean, he is, in a sense, making an attempt, but it goes astray pretty quickly. So we're really now slowly watching the beginning of the end from here down. And I think now we see more the origin of his own personal problem. The master's voice, see where I am now? Fourth paragraph. The master's voice and his images gave me great confidence. I went into the house, entered the room, and I was in Vienna. I was a schoolboy who held a map with sheets of music in his hand. I knew clearly that we were in the year 1913, but it was the year 1913 on another sheet of the conical bag, namely on that sheet on which I can still remember the house at Hornbeek 2 in Kuznach. So he's blending the two periods of time. The room contained a grand piano and other pieces of furniture as in the old days. A lady leaned against the grand piano, but her hair was dark and she was like a trusted old friend. She was a distinguished lady and I felt I should address her with great respect. When I approached her at the piano and she held out her hand to me and said, "You have not played the piano for a long time. I will give you a lesson." Now, did you follow it about his maternal grandmother? Or should we review that?
Review.
That, it sounds like that was his one real connection with feeling, with the feminine, with his heart. His maternal grandmother was an accomplished singer and pianist. And she apparently would just play the piano for him for hours as a young boy. And so that piano teacher, on the one hand, is reminiscent of von Franz, and then on the other hand, it's reminiscent of his maternal grandmother. But that's the access to the feminine which he so badly needs. So the start is right. But then, now go back to 140 again. Mach's influence. Ernst Mach, you know, like Mach 1, Mach 2, and Jets, that was his godfather. And Mach was, I think, I'm not up on all my philosophy here, but I think you'd say he was a quintessential logical positivist, which means if you can't prove it, it doesn't exist. There was no other reality other than what can be experimentally verified. And what our author tells us is very helpful. At the bottom of 140, Hasidism belongs to these currents, and is in a letter to Marie-Louise von Franz on October 14th, Pauli quoted a story from the Hasidic tales of Martin Buber, a story which he saw in reference to his own situation. It is put in the mouth of Rabbi, I'm not sure how that said, Elim Melech, and explains the prophet Elijah's presence in every Jew. Whenever a boy is presented to the covenant at circumcision, a piece of Elijah's soul is present and enters the child, according to the child's nature and essence, a large or small amount. And as the growing boy develops his Elijah soul, then the Elijah which is inside appears to him. Pauli comments further, and this is the punchline. Earlier I had very similar dreams with my godfather in them instead of Elijah. So science had taken the place of the mystical relationship to anything else. Do you remember the story of Elijah? He defeated the prophets of Baal, and Jezebel put a price on his head, and he fled, lived in the wilderness where ravens fed him, and he prayed to die in his despair. And God came in a small, still voice. I think that's where Simon and Garfunkel got the sounds of silence. Small, still voice, and directed him on his next task. So it's an image of standing against the collective, going through despair at the rejection, and then receiving orientation from the inner voice about what your task is. And in place of that, which is what we've been saying he needs to do, is this static image of Mach. So I think there is the real problem. And as the author says next, the piano teacher is the dark anima. A couple other details I just picked up. When she says, you have not played the piano for a long time, it's another red flag. What's that about?
You've not had emotions or feelings in a long time?
Well, yes, and I think it's saying his marriage is dead.
Oh.
See, if he plays the feeling with plays the piano with von Franz, but hasn't played it up to now, that's a pretty sure indicator that his marriage is a conventional one. Another little detail, which I think just attests to his caring. I answered, I am looking, now I'm on page 125. we're going to be going back and forth between the text and the interpretation. I answer, I'm looking forward to this lesson, et cetera, et cetera. Moreover, I used to know a girl who must also have felt greatly troubled. I knew this because she once said to me, "My mother has destroyed my femininity." As you know, von Franz had a horrendous negative mother complex. But I could not believe her. How could my feelings be touched by something which has been destroyed? So I think there, again, we get a confession of their closeness. Pardon?
Destroyed is just too harsh a word for me. Obviously, this is what was said, but it just feels, you can have a negative mother experience, but you're still who you are.
It's histrionic.
Yeah, thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and I think she could be histrionic. Certainly at that time. And remember, she's what? What did we figure? 35 years old. Yeah. But I think she would say, you did feel there was something strange about her femininity. I wouldn't say it was not there. It certainly wasn't a conventional femininity. She had a very high, tight voice and a brain that just wouldn't stop. So conventionally you might feel that, but no, I didn't feel at the deepest sense there was no femininity there. Quite contrary. Very deep femininity. But not of a, Barbie doll type. And that's what he wanted, I guess, was more of a conventional. Okay, now the plot thickens. The lady gave me a friendly smile and said to me, as if she was speaking to a schoolboy, "No, that is impossible. But it might be possible that things have not been true, which earlier on were quite self-evident, just when you had your little thoughts." Now that's a puzzle to me, that sentence. In other words, I think what the gist of that sentence is, he's responding, well, maybe she damaged your femininity at an earlier time, but I don't think it's still damaged. I don't think it's that crucial to the text. And I played a normal C major chord, C, E, G. Like an inquisitive child, I shouted, "I would like should be an I there. I would like to know what really happened," but the lady did not know either. That's a detail. All that's a detail. Dealing with his feelings to her femininity. Now, do we have a C major chord?
I can, but the way I have it set here is in the music stuff that I was going to do, she played the C major scale, the minor scale first, of course, and then goes into the chord that he played. So.
C major.
That's the C major chord.
Now I need to ask some questions. Are there more than one C major chords?
Yes.
Yes, I'm sure there are. Courting is one of those things that it could take forever to understand it. But yes.
So there's not just one.
This is the basic CEG report, CEG.
I'm totally out of my league here. And is there an emotional tone associated with that chord?
Well, I'm kind of getting into my stuff here that I'm going to say. Major and minor have adjectives that I use to describe them. Major scale is comprised of 7 to 8 notes, and that's like an octave, and that is the simplest form of a scale, is C major. That is the simplest. Because there
starts in C and ends in C.
Right, and there are no black keys, so there's no...
Oh, there are no black keys. Yes,
there's no sharp and flat.
You're just going up the piano.
Just the white keys. It's just the white keys.
And when an orchestra tunes, don't they tune to C major? Mm-hmm.
That's in the very center of the piano. It's actually not the very center of the piano. The grand piano is a little over, but it's what everything is centered around. This is where you begin.
The treble flat is to the right, and then to the left is the bass flat.
But in music, there's no, like, C major chord means happy or sad or...
Well, music that is written in major chords tend to be more celebratory, jubilant, triumphant, joyful. There is a joy to them. And, you know, recall he said, tones would be really lovely now, for I am greatly troubled. So that he plays the C major chord there is almost like trying to relieve some of the troubled feelings that we have.
Yeah, what he is saying there. Or anticipating a happy ending, that's sort of what I was thinking. C major chord is like total sunshine, would you say?
I would say that.
Yeah.
What were the first notes that were played? That was the individual notes?
That's the C major scale.
That was the scale.
And then the second was a minor scale, so that you could just eligible to get the feel for the difference between what major and minor sounds like.
And then
the third thing was the actual chord.
And then that's when you play them all together?
Yes.
You play three of them.
Yes, the chord is mostly made up basically of three notes simultaneously.
Okay.
There can be more. But
it can't be less, huh? Can it be two notes?
It can be less, and he has one that's only two. But what happens is there's a psycho phenomenon where we in the Western world fill in the missing.
I see.
Fill in the missing notes. It's just automatically happening.
Those first notes that were played sounded like inquisitiveness to me.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
In the C major.
Well, the very first thing that came on the tape, the
no.
Yeah, it sounded like inquisitiveness to me.
I wondered about this too when I was reading it, because it would say a chord with like four notes, like you're getting a little ahead.
Yeah,
but I think the heck of a spread on the.
Right, and well, what I told Gary, what my teacher did was she tried to center them all around the middle scene, and so we kind of transposed them around that area. But yes, it would take, you know, have to pull some of
them. It made me wonder, though, if they aren't arpeggios, something plays one note at a time, kind of like a scale.
Well, that would be a chord.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I really want to get out of this, is what is the emotional message of these chords. And
when you hear them all together, it's quite emotional.
Let's get into it a bit, and then we'll take a break. We'll hear what you've got to say, and then we'll go back to it. But try to get ourselves acquainted with how he's using the chords as the emotional message to her. I think that's what's so important. And I'm anticipating a bit, but you'll notice when the stranger's lecture, no more chords, no more music. There's no more music from the beginning of the lecture to the strangers until the end. So if we can, it would be great to see if we can get, if there is a way to interpret the chords, what emotions are accompanying his thoughts as he writes this. Sure. So, yeah.
You said something. I thought that his dark animal was giving him the note to play. But yes.
But dark animal would be his feelings, which are coming to him.
Okay, and so who's he playing it for then? When you said her, is it Marie von Franz?
That's a good question. I think probably for himself, that he's really talking to himself here. And you may keep that question open and see what you think by the end of the piano lesson. You know, ostensibly, it's to von Franz. But we're going to get confused because it's to von Franz, but the person who is speaking is like an avatar of von Franz, who is his grandmother. So it's like perhaps he's using these women as a mirror to communicate to himself. That might be the deeper meaning of it.
So they would be like the anima inside him.
Right.
That are trying to bridge something from the unconscious into his consciousness.
Right, or that, you know, we've seen that, well, we're going to see it again, how easily he separates thought and feeling. And I think the meaning of the positive attempt in this is to bring thought and feeling together. But he's not a poet, so he doesn't write poetry to express his feelings. He's writing thoughts, largely, with music to express his feelings. So it's an attempt to bring the two together. And it starts out cheery. I mean, we're really going to go step by step here. I have no idea where this is going to take us.
The whole paragraph, he talks about being a schoolboy. He talks about your little thought. He talks about the inquisitive child and then he plays a teenager. That's the first chord you learn when you learn to play the piano.
Mm-hmm.
So any child, the very first piece they learn to play is always right at middle C. And so, you know, the twinkle, twinkle, little start, whatever it is, it's always there. And there's a naivete to it. There's an innocence. There's a naivete.
It's so easy compared to what comes after.
So that when you talk about it being joyful, it's a joy that isn't a hard-won joy.
Right.
It's a joy
that's very important.
That comes out of just this. Gosh, I played Twinkle Twinkle Little Star.
Yeah.
It's kind of initiation, isn't it?
Yeah. It's like the very beginning process where there's a real naivete involved in that. And the delight that you get comes in a child's delight. It isn't the delight that comes in a hard-won one life.
I don't know why I felt this, but for some reason the phrase that went through my mind was a rootless hope, a groundless hope.
Mm-hmm.
It's anticipatory, but with no basis for anticipation. And remember his personal style was to come on very friendly, and then later there'd be a blow-up. The gushy talk we saw between him and Yaffe. See, that's C major. Everything is light, wonderful, like sugar. And then
same thing as wishful thinking, like.
Well, you know, in the Freudian language, it's one half of the borderline. But one half of their personality is very charming.
Okay.
Very engaging. It sucks you in, and then once you're in there, they stab you in the back. There are two people, and this is person one. And it's not tied to person two. Now, that may be too hard, I don't know. But that's what crossed my mind. But it can't, it's so bright. It's like a dream that starts well, watch out. They always go downhill. If they start bad, you're in good shape, because they can get better. But when they start good, they always go downhill. So, again, I take this just as me thinking out loud. I don't want to be committed to any of these thoughts. Because I don't know whether it's accurate. We have to see. But this is what goes through my mind when I see something. You look at all sorts of possibilities and then see if any of these thoughts carry through to the end. It could be a hopefulness or it could be naivete.
And remember, a child just starting to learn to play the piano, you're at the very beginning. If you want to get good, you have to work hard and practice and be conscious and aware.
Yeah.
Or you're never going to get off Twinkle Twinkle Little Star.
Yeah.
And most people that begin end there.
Yeah.
That's
where I'm inclined to go, that he really does have a twinkle, twinkle, little star attitude to our relationship. And then he's not there for the grind of the conflict and the working through and the apologies and
the later course.
Right.
But the thing is, though, teenager scale and teenager court, and those are the groundwork. You have to lay some groundwork there. When you're learning to play the piano, you have to start somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And this middle C grounds you. It divides the piano. It gives you an orientation to the keyboard. So there is that other aspect.
Yeah, well, let's keep both those in mind.
Okay.
I really don't know which way to go.
Well, it's going to go very eerie, very fast.
Mm-hmm. No, I'd rather go through the text for a while till we get the feeling, and then we can stop and hear them all. In fact, it might be good to hear them all in succession at the end, because the end of the chords comes quite a bit before the end of the text. After a while, I heard another, number 126, I heard another command coming from a great distance. The master said clearly, "Captain." Did not understand this at all. The lady, however, jumped from her chair and paced a few times up and down the room, all aflurry. Then she sat down again beside me and said, "I will guide your hand." First, she let me play the minor third, C E flat. I'm assuming that's right. C E flat is a minor third. Yeah. See how it's changing? Wow. What a difference, huh? Followed by, I'll have to tell you something. A flat, C, E flat. Next came a fourth, and that is a typo. I mean, it's not a typo, it's a mistranslation. I went back to the original. And what is in the handwritten original, which is, I'm so glad I have it, otherwise we'd be lost, is G, B.
GB.
Yeah, that's what's in his text.
But there is a G. She added a G on.
That might be nice where we forget to have Sandy's.
Yeah. Janet added a G, though. I'm almost sure she did.
Okay.
There's no way. Let me look at that. No, she didn't.
So let us hear the others. They might be pretty much the same.
Okay, so we've heard the E-flat. Now we're going to hear A-flat, C, E-flat.
Okay.
And the D, flat, flat.
That's the A, C, E-flat, huh? That's what she's calling C, B flat, but that's wrong. C, B flat is not correct.
Okay.
It should be G, B.
G, B? No,
yeah.
Flat 7?
No.
Nope.
Footnote.
This is G, B.
Sorry, it's not my doing that. It's wrong in the published text. It's wrong in the published text, and I went back and checked the handwritten. I have no idea what a fourth is. What's a fourth? Like four notes between. Three notes between. Three whole notes. Yeah, see, this is where I get lost.
G flat. I mean, G sharp, A, A sharp, B. So that should be four. One, two, three.
Is that four? Yeah. Maybe we can, when we get the break, Sandy, if you don't mind getting your guy, and we'll be able to use them both. There's a bunch of these mistakes, and I apologize, it's not me. I took this, this is not my translation, I took this from a magazine. It has already been translated. And I went, because you had said, are all of these notes right? And so I thought, well, are they all right? And I went back to the original, and it's about four times.
And my teacher said, this is no piano.
Yeah. I don't know who in the world could have made that mistake. I mean, that's a pretty serious mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I should write something about that. But in any case, this is what is published in a magazine. But it's wrong. Let's see. Let's see. There's a, but I think we get the feeling that it's moving toward melancholy. Would you say toward discord? Can you say a chord is discordant? Yeah. So chords don't have to, chords can be discordant, huh? But yet somehow they resonate with us, which is why they're called a chord, or?
Usually when something is discordant,
yeah,
we will, the Western ear will want to move it where it's supposed to go. And feel it inside your Western resolve.
I see.
A lot of modern music doesn't do that.
Uh-huh.
Indian music.
Doesn't do that. Yeah. Okay.
And they have a capability psychically to handle that.
Yeah.
But we need that
resolution. Is that, it's interesting, isn't it? Wow. There's so much there that I just don't understand, but I know it's important. Okay. I think we need to say anything there. I guess we better go to 141 now. This is introductory. Next, Pauli hears the command of the captain from a great distance. Here I am. This is an allusion to the story of the captain from, I can remember this right, Capernaum, I think it's pronounced, from Gospel of Matthew. The words of this captain, here quoted by Pauli, play an important role in the Holy Communion of the Catholic Mass. They are spoken by the priest before he presents the host as the body of Christ to the congregation. He says then, however, my soul rather than my servant. It thus follows that, in reference to the motif of the captain, the healing of the body as well as the soul is meant. That is here the crucial motif and the central problem. Pauli and the lady are both very touched on this account. Let me read a little further, now 126. Here in Vienna lives a captain with his daughter who is ill. Her soul is ill. I can clearly see how the master approaches the captain's house. He seems to expect the captain to speak the words. Which words? Asked the lady, astonished. The words, of course, and I spoke them aloud. Lord, I am not worthy to receive you in my house, but speak one word and my servant will recover. Let's try to make sense of all this. Are you familiar with the story in the Matthew? And neither was I. Maybe it might be worth reading it. It's not long. is it Matthew 8:5? And he entered Capernaum. As he entered Capernaum, a centurion came forward to him, beseeching him, saying, Lord, my servant is lying paralyzed at home in terrible distress. So first you get the irony that it's a Roman soldier approaching Jesus. And Jesus said to him, I will come and heal him. But the centurion answered him, Lord, I am not worthy to have you come under my roof, but only say the word, and my servant will be healed. For I am a man under authority, with soldiers under me, and I say to one, go, and he goes, and to another, come, and he comes, and to my slave, do this, and he does it. When Jesus heard him, he marveled and said to those who followed, truly I say to you, not even in Israel have I found such faith. Now that is cryptic, to say the least. But what we're told in in the footnote, is that it's taken as a statement of the soldier's faith in Jesus, that he has the faith that if Jesus speaks, the thing will happen. That's what the text is meant to communicate. That, I mean, it doesn't make sense out of context when Jesus says, truly I say unto you, not even in Israel have I found such faith. The faith that he saw is the soldiers believing that one word of his would make a difference. So the act of imagination replays the biblical passage, and the captain is in the house and the master is coming to heal, so that puts the master in the place of Christ. And it suggests, as he's saying here, that what needs to be healed is body and soul, because the servant was physically ill. Then we get another chord. That's F, A, C, F.
And that one's a little more hopeful.
Mm-hmm. Right. It is interesting. Mm-hmm.
You know, right before, the very last thing you say in the Catholic Mass before you go up to get the host is, Lord, I'm not worthy to receive you, but only say the word and my soul shall be healed.
Mm-hmm.
That's the last thing you say. So it is that sense of hopefulness that in receiving into the body, the soul will be healed.
Right. So I think so far so good in this. You can see that he's acknowledging his suffering soul, and he's asking, or he's acknowledging that it will be the confluence of matter and spirit that heals him. See why I say that? The master being the bridge between the two. If you haven't figured out, this thing is very confusing.
Yeah.
You can imagine what it would be like to talk to the guy. This is what I think was one of the frustrating things. But anyway, do we need to use anything else there? That's what he says on page 141. I think the big thing there is how the master is put in the place of Christ. Bottom of 141.
Was Paul writing this, sitting at the piano, and actually,
we don't know. He must have known the piano. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Well, I think it's interesting that the Christ figure, since the issue that we discussed earlier was began with this Jewish
background. Yeah.
So that he's. I mean, they're still waiting for the coming Savior.
I don't know how much to make of that. Our author certainly makes a lot of that. For some reason, I'm not inclined to. Okay. That what we're really dealing with here is something that has nothing to do with denominations. And it's simply him using imagery typical of the self to express a dilemma. That's how I feel, but that's just my personal opinion. I don't see anything about Judaism, Protestantism, Catholicism that he's speaking culturally, not religiously. But who knows? Let's do one more and we'll take a break. Because things now start to turn. Uh, 126. Well, actually, they don't start to turn quite yet. It's good news for us before. He reflects on the parallel between this event in the piano lesson and the biblical passage. We pick up, and I continued. And I continued briskly, it should be a C. Capernaum or Vienna does not make any difference, but the captain in Vienna did not speak the word. Mind you, all he needed to change was to say, my daughter instead of my servant. I already learned in primary school, which was not a good school, by the way, that one often speaks of my soul instead of my servant. But the captain in Vienna belonged to a school in which the words were understood, but not the meaning, so he could not find the words when the master wanted to come. That's the tragedy, I think. You follow?
Say more.
Well, remember we are in Vienna. We're in Vienna and we're in Palestine
okay.
at the same time. And there is a captain with an ailing servant or daughter, depending on the version, in a house. Mm-hmm. Christ or the master, those two being equivalent for Pali, coming to offer healing. If only it's asked for, and the captain doesn't say, come, heal us.
But he says, only say the word.
But he doesn't say it. The captain in Vienna doesn't say it.
No, we expect him to say it.
Right.
But he doesn't. He's been angry.
But he's asking the Christ figure to say the words. He says, I'm not worthy that you should enter under my roof. Only say the word, and I shall be healed, or she shall be healed. To me, he's asking the Christ to say the word, that I don't need you to come to my house. I just need you to say the word. I have that faith in your word.
Right, but here the scene is replayed that the master is coming to the house.
The scene
in Vienna is that the master is coming to the house.
Okay.
And the captain is in the house needing to say something, and he doesn't say anything.
Okay.
The master and the captain are two separate
things. Yeah.
But I'm wondering, wasn't the captain like the master in a prior, like Peter Strong, wasn't he the captain?
Yes.
He was part master
yeah.
too.
Right. So. It's very confusing.
Yeah, it is.
Well, in a way they're the same, but the captain is science. Which is trying to become a fuller science. And it would become a fuller science if the captain and the master could get together. And that's analogous to Pali being a scientist, trying to develop into a fuller person by accepting the reality of synchronicity. They're almost the same, but with a different emphasis. The captain is like science, and the master is what is trying to be added to science. So in a way, it's science too, but it's what's missing that needed to be added. And then always translate science into Pali's personality. It's a direct analogy. Everybody okay with that? Hence the master turned around, and I see how he leaves. Why don't we hear one more chord, and then we'll take a break.
Okay.
It's the same discordant as above, huh? Now, why couldn't he see that?
That's what I asked if he put, you know, he could see what he was doing with the piano.
Uh-huh.
You know, but if it's in its head, it's the paper bag thing going on.
Yeah.
This would be the minor of the beginning chord that he played. So he played C major chord here. This would be C minor.
I see.
It's appropriate for the master to leave in that note.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. My teacher was making all kinds of sad of you.
Let's have a stretch.